Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. I'm really excited by the fact that once again we are going to present today a voter forum. Dr. Andra Gillespie is with me to co-host the forum and to ask questions. Thank you for being here,
Andra. Thank you for having me.
You know, one of the things that's exciting to me about this is that people like you and I, we talk a lot about politics, presumably from our professional backgrounds, that sort of thing. But the reality is, these are the people who matter when it comes right down to it. It's what they're thinking.
Well, these are the folks who are going to be voting. And then for somebody like me who does research, I can't do my job unless I know what other people are thinking. So I'm actually very grateful to be here because this gets my intellectual juices flowing. And this will help me as I think about how to frame things for public consumption and even how to set things up for my research.
Great, great. And our timing, I mean, obviously couldn't be better. We've had this astonishing weekend that we've all come through in the last days and the debate Sunday night. So we have so much to talk about. We're going to honor a tradition that actually started with our last forum when Jim Galloway asked an opening question. He couldn't be with us tonight, that I think is a really great way to introduce everybody. Darryl Welch, if I can start with you, I'm going to ask each person to tell us in a brief amount of time a personal story, something about your life that has brought you to where you stand in terms of this election. And, you know, I'm looking at maybe a minute at the most.
Well, I'm 59 years old, and I first voted in 1976 for Gerald Ford when he ran against Jimmy Carter. And that the entire campaign, the Republican primary in Kansas, the whole thing was fascinating to me. And I've been interested in politics ever since. I've always been able to pick a candidate. This year is 180 degrees from anywhere I've ever been politically as far as being committed to a candidate. I will probably decide on November, I guess election day is November the 8th. I'll probably decide when I got the stylus in my hand who I'm going to vote for.
Good. We're going to have an opportunity to talk to you more to hear where you're coming from on your decision. And we do want to say you're retired Atlanta firefighter, DeKalb firefighter.
DeKalb firefighter.
And you were, in interest of transparency, an intern for Political Rewind when you were finishing your degree at Georgia State.
I had the great opportunity to be involved with Political Rewind, the fastest hour in radio.
So. Well, it's good to have you back, Darryl. Megan McMeekin, tell us about you.
I would say for me, it was started in my early 20s when I just graduated from college on the West Coast, and I moved to New York City to do something different and just try growing up and working. And it was right for the Clinton, Bill Clinton first election. It was right at that time period. And that just, it was at a time in my life, I think, at that intersection of starting to really pay attention and being independent and being on my own. The person I was dating at the time, he's now my husband, we were very in sync about that, and we could have those discussions and share that, and it felt unique for us in where we were as grown-ups, as adults, and being able to do that. And really, I think since then, we've been on that journey, just tracking it all these years later. But I would say that really started with Bill Clinton, and I had an opportunity to see both him and Hillary very, very early on in their in his first term, speak at a conference where I was attending, and it was riveting. It was very riveting and just an interesting.
So your journey has brought you to Hillary Clinton in this cycle?
It has.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Linnell Babbage Torres from Dunwoody.
Yes, sir. I'm just trying to think. As a young person growing up in Atlanta and being familiar with a lot of the racial tension that was going on when I grew up, I was a bit of a militant. I thought that America, while it had promise, it wasn't really, doing it for me. It wasn't until I visited Mexico for the first time and I saw real poverty that I think it shook me to my core that even though we have difficulties here, it was nothing compared to that. And So I started a love for America that I didn't have before. And I think, you know, what brought me to Trump is that for me, he's the American dream, and I've always believed in the American dream. I've always believed that the American dream equaled freedom, freedom to be and do whatever you chose to do. If you chose to be, you know, a housewife and you wanted to stay at home and do pottery, you could do that. If you decided to get on a rocket ship and go to the moon, you could do that. It didn't matter.
So, Andra, you may know, you probably do, that Leo Smith, the director of Minority Outreach for the Republican Party, has a running bet with all of us that Trump's going to win 20% of the African-American vote in Georgia. We've told him over and over again he's going to lose that bet. But, you know, if Linnell gets the number of her friends out there, maybe Leo will.
I'm working very hard on it.
I mean, Leo is a good friend of mine. And so, you know, it's, you know, I think I'm with Bill on this one. But Leo works very hard. And I know he's going to work diligently until he gets his 20%.
Aaron Driver from Powder Springs. What's the story that brings you to where you are at the election as the election approaches?
So I grew up in Guyton, Georgia, one county over from Savannah. I grew up as a poor white child, essentially in a trailer. We never had much money. So I started working when I was 12 for an uncle, continued that up through 18. At that point, I managed to get a $12 an hour job, still not much food in the fridge, sharing a house with other people. I did the only thing I could do to gain access to medical insurance and education. I joined the military. I did 6 years in the Air Force, left for ideological reasons, but I got married in the process, bought a home in Atlanta. I've managed to get 3 degrees now, have a very nice job, but I feel that most people can't do what I did. And I think that there needs to be a path for everyone else to do and get what I have.
And you're still undecided, yes?
I was, but I'm not anymore.
Oh. Do you want to give us, is it okay to ask him at this point, or do we want to wait on that?
I like surprises.
Okay, we'll wait. That'll be interesting. Erica Wilson, you're the longest driver in the group, Albany.
That's right, Southwest Georgia.
Tell us about you.
So my path started ninth grade, economics teacher. I heard him talk about or describe welfare, and the way that he described it, in a classroom, a very diverse classroom, it seemed as though he was talking about perhaps maybe me. So I went home to my mom and talked to my mom and dad about it. I'm a military brat. And so my mom is like a data dumper. And so she confirmed what I said, what I was sharing with her. She said, well, don't go to school and say anything. Well, I did say something because it offended me that he was not only expressing that openly, but then to other kids that were in class. So long story short, my mom went up and talked to the teacher, but that's when she began to share with me how to harness my voice and that power within that voice. So that's where I began to really get active in politics. And that was the advent of the Clintons being in office. So it's really intrigued.
Darcy Butkus from Cumming.
Well, I am here today because I will admit my age like you did. I'm 54 years old. And
no way.
Yes way.
Go ahead.
But I have only really actively been involved in politics for about 2 years. I was a career woman and traveled, raised my daughters, and I really didn't have an interest in politics back then. But I think what changed my mind, what changed my life and became politically involved was August 9th of 2014. And what happened on August 9th, 2014?
Do you mean Ferguson?
Is where police officer Darren Wilson and an unarmed black gentleman, Michael Brown. What I couldn't believe is how this administration prejudged what occurred on that day without any forensic evidence, ballistic fingerprints, nothing. And it opened up my eyes, Bill. It really opened up my eyes. I said, I need to pay attention and be aware of what's going on in this country and in this world.
Wow. Thank you. And Don McAdam from Sandy Spring.
Yes, sir.
Hi.
Hi. My political life, I've always been a lifelong Democrat. I campaigned for Barack Obama. I bought a bunch of bumper stickers, handed them out free to anybody who would stop and take a bumper sticker, 2008. But by 2012, I saw the big banks getting bigger. I saw incomes dwindling for the middle class. I saw, well, I thought he failed us. And campaign finance was one of those areas that I really felt like he let us down. He talked as if he said he was opposed to the big money in politics, and yet it seemed like he didn't really do anything about it. And I really don't think we can solve any of the problems that face this country until we first address the campaign finance. And so that's why in 2012, I voted for Jill Stein.
Wow.
And
thank
so
you
right
all
now
very...
I'm challenged between Stein and Clinton.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Don.
Sorry.
Thank you all. Those are really, really fascinating stories, Andra.
And actually, Don, you segue very nicely into the next question. So if you have additional issues that you want to talk about, please feel free to jump in first. But what issues do you think are the most important issues this election cycle for you? So what are you basing your voting decisions on from a substantive standpoint?
One of the things that I'm most interested in is climate change. Scientists are telling us that we have to take action. Scientists have been warning us about climate change for decades, and it's gotten to the point where we're actually starting to see the effects. And that's a real problem, because these effects are going to get worse. Even if we take action now, they're going to get worse. We have to take action. It really bothers me that during the debates, we haven't had a question about climate change, as far as I can tell. Hillary Clinton barely mentioned it Sunday night. And so I'm very concerned about that, and it's something I think our Congress needs to take action.
Thanks.
Okay, so we've heard campaign finance reform and climate change. Any other issues?
Criminal
justice reform.
I'm very concerned about candidate Trump's law and order reference. And in Hillary Clinton's outline, one of the things that she does detail that she's going to work on is criminal reform. Under her husband's administration, President Clinton, there was the three strikes and you're out. So I'm very excited to see her to go in to continue behind President Barack Obama to make changes so that mass incarceration is not the biggest. We don't have the biggest population of people that are incarcerated in the United States of America.
So what concerns you about law and order?
So that whole code, that was a Nixon throwback. So to me, law and order says that, well, what we are going to do, and since candidate Trump has been endorsed by the Fraternal Order of Police, what that says to me is that what you're going to do is continue those tactics that do suppress communities of colors instead of having a fair and balanced type of environment whereby which a person who is of color is not immediately judged as being a threat and is then taken down. So,
right. I've got a little less than 1 minute. Does anybody else have an issue that's really burning? Megan?
I would say the top two are gun control and legislative issues that affect women the most. And that might be more of a down ticket issue. I haven't heard that as much from the top, both the candidates actually, but those are high up for
you
me.
Mean gun control you've heard a lot about,
yes,
but you're talking
legislative,
about women's issues,
right? Women's issues and what's happening with lack of resource, less resource, defunding resources, things like that, and those seem to be a little more localized.
So you mean
point.
Like reproductive health,
mm-hmm.
kinds of issues? Okay.
Okay, great start. You are really starting us off well. We're going to just take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue going around the table. We want to hear from all of you on the issues that matter most to you in this election. But let's take a very short break. And in a moment, we'll come back with more of Political Rewind.
On the next Fresh Air, Jonathan Safran Foer, his new novel, Here I Am, focuses on a Jewish family in which the marriage is falling apart. The son is preparing for the bar mitzvah he doesn't want to have, and Israel is facing possible destruction. The novel wrestles with questions about the pursuit of meaning and happiness and the place of Judaism in the life of a secular person. Join us.
You can hear that on Fresh Air this afternoon at 3 o'clock right here on GPB.
Welcome back to the second Political Rewind Voter Forum on our Wednesday afternoon show. I'm here with Dr. Andra Gillespie of Emory University. We have a panel of seven individuals, all of whom responded to our request that you contact us to tell us why you wanted to be a part of this panel. And our producer, Trevor Young, identified people who we thought would be a great mix. And so far, I think he's done a great job, Dr. Gillespie. Go ahead, Andre. You started us off with that great question about most important issues.
So we were in the middle of talking about the issues that are most important to you. So we've heard from Don and Erica and Megan. What about the others? Daryl.
I guess the Supreme Court's a little scary. You never know. I'm pro-choice. I'll go ahead and get that out of the way. But I'm also conservative on a lot of stuff. And while I don't feel necessarily that a woman's right to choose is in jeopardy, I mean, people have been debating abortion since Roe v. Wade in 73, and it's still with us. But there are other issues such as gun control and those sort of things that that kind of do really hang in a balance, you know, without going to too many right-wing talking points. But the elections are important and they have consequences. And whatever the outcome of this particular election is, we're going to be living with those consequences for many, many years to come. And I think that's important. And as I've said earlier, I'm on the fence and I just don't know which way to go on it.
Are you suggesting that the Supreme Court and your thinking about which candidate would appoint justices more in line with your thinking
right.
could be the deciding factor?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Isn't that clear at this point?
It is, but it isn't because I'm not sure I necessarily trust Donald Trump to do what he says he's going to
okay.
do.
Fair enough.
So I'm not sure.
Okay.
So we've heard climate change and gun control. We've heard criminal justice reform and campaign finance reform. Are there any other issues we should put on the table? Darcy?
Our country's security.
Okay, national security. Anything else? Aaron?
Quality and access to education from bottom to top.
Okay, then. So are you looking at that as a national issue or a statewide issue?
A little bit of both. Okay. I'd say not only access to higher education, but quality of education in different communities.
Okay, great. Are there any other issues that we've left off, Linnell?
Well, she just said mine, which is security. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm extremely concerned about the porous border. I am a pro-lifer because I was supposed to be aborted and my five children were supposed to be aborted. And I thank God we're all here. And gun control, because I've lived in the inner city where it's very dangerous as I was growing up and as a young mother. And I know how long it takes the police to get to, you know, you when you're in trouble. So I've had that experience, and if I had a gun, it would have saved me a lot of pain. So I'm for guns. Yes.
So now think about the candidates. And we can talk about all four candidates. Three of them are on the ballot here in Georgia. How would you rate the candidates on the issues that are most important to you? How, you know, what do they say? Does it resonate? Does it sound sincere to you?
Daryl's already told us he doesn't quite, although Trump, he thinks, may lean in the direction he wants Supreme Court justices to lean. He doesn't quite trust Trump on that score. So that's interesting. But Megan?
I think when it comes to gun control, I actually think Hillary's done a pretty balanced job of addressing what could be concerns on both sides. I would have stronger suggestions than she might even have, but we are trying to please a large population here in America and having to make that work. So I think she's done a fairly good job of saying, I'm not taking, you know, rights away, but could it be reasonable to talk about stronger background checks? And why can't we do that?
So, Linnell, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but since
sure.
you said that you're pro-Second Amendment,
yes.
when you hear Hillary Clinton say that she might want to restrict access to certain mm-hmm. types of weapons, does that sound like she's supportive of the Second Amendment or not?
Not to me.
Okay.
Because usually when people bring up subject matter, whether it's abortion or whatever, they say, oh, it's just going to be for the first trimester or something. And then now we're looking at 9 months. So things seem to, you know, the momentum seems to grow once you open that door. The same thing with gay rights, the same thing with immigration. I'm extremely concerned about immigration, and I'm sorry I didn't mention that, because I do agree with Donald Trump Jr. It is like Skittles, and you have no idea. And, you know, just the idea of what they're going through in Europe happening here, our people are not ready or prepared for that kind of lifestyle. And I think we need to be very protective of our freedom. This is the greatest country in the world, and we need to make sure that we keep it that way.
So can I ask a quick question? So you've identified immigration, which has obviously been a subject of great debate in, in this cycle. And Donald Trump has seized upon it to, to talk about, we need to be careful about our borders. We need to shut them down to a large extent. We need to have extreme vetting. Darcy, you're nodding. And so I'm going to come to you on this. And it's open to everybody. As long as we're talking immigration, is Trump, beyond whether you think he's right or not, do you believe that Trump can do the things legally, has the ability in terms of the way he would work with a with Congress to accomplish the kinds of things he wants to do on immigration?
100%. I stand behind Trump 100%. He is the man that I wanted even before he said he was going to seek the presidency, prior to him coming down that escalator. And I am thrilled that I can sit here and tell you I volunteer on the campaign. I'll do anything it takes to get that man in office. I believe him. He's genuine. This man is a billionaire. For him to do this, you know he loves his country. And yes, I do believe he will take care of these important issues with the help of good people surrounding him.
So I just have a question. When you said that you wanted him before he announced, did you want him specifically, or did you want somebody who was like him? Somebody
no,
coming
no,
from
I
the
wanted
outside?
Trump.
Wanted
there were rumors circulating that he was going to run. I'm like, let's do this.
Anybody want to weigh in on that?
I would like to mention one thing on immigration. Not getting into the moral side of it, but mostly the economic side of it. My industry in particular relies heavily on immigrant workers.
Landscaping.
E-Verify has been trouble for us. Yeah. It dried up the labor force. We're not growing organically anymore. We have to have that inorganic growth. What Trump wants to do would destroy our economy, and it would destroy my industry in Atlanta across the United States. Not even looking at the moral side of it, the economics is disastrous.
And I agree with Aaron. Southwest Georgia, agriculture is huge. And so we have a huge migrant community that services agriculture and live and thrive in certain aspects. And so I share the sentiments of Aaron as well, that economically that it would really, really dry the economy as well. And so I'm totally against what is being stated as extreme vetting.
Have any of the candidates offered a solution, maybe a kind of meeting in the middle where you could protect the border, but then also allow people to kind of be able to freely come in and work?
Don, you wanted to weigh in. Let's let you.
Well, yeah, because what Andrea is talking about is the process of legislation, right? You're talking about, is there a way to come to terms with the immigration issue? And I'm not so sure that that's going to be easily done. Because we do have needs in this country, and we have needs for low-wage workers, and that's unfortunate. I'm totally for the $15 an hour minimum wage, and I think that laborers in the field should have workers' rights and those kind of expectations that they would be paid fairly. But the question was asked was, do we think Donald Trump would be effective in implementing immigration reform, deportation? And I don't think so. I think that Congress is never going to allow that.
You want to get a quick word in?
Yeah, just about the low-wage worker thing. My first job, I was a carpenter's apprentice for $2 an hour. And brick masons and carpenters, those were skills, those were trades that people aspired to. The influx of cheap labor, those guys back 40 years ago were making $8, $10 an hour. They're still probably making $8, $10 an hour because there are people that will do it for $4, $5, $6, $7 an hour off the books. So what we've done is we've taken a whole group of people who 30, 40 years ago were tradesmen who had skills and abilities, and these were jobs that people wanted. And because we're giving them to folks who will work cheap, who will work off the books, we're eliminating a whole group of people. And, and, you know, for people who are concerned about middle class America, those were the middle class Americans of 40 years ago.
All right, Daryl, thank you. Let me move this along, because we have so much to cover. We haven't even talked about the debate. We haven't even talked about the tic-tac tape. I want to do a quick round with each of you. I'm going to start with you, Aaron. Give me no more than three words that describe who Hillary Clinton is to you. What do you...
Leader, capable, and loyal.
Progressive, proven, experienced.
Darcy?
On Hillary, my three words?
Mm-hmm.
Liar, corrupt, dishonest.
Don?
Secretive,
Doesn't have to be three.
Politician. Let's leave it at that.
Say it again.
Secretive and just a standard politician.
Linnell?
Well, unfortunately, I have to repeat some of the same things that she said. Liar, corruption, and murderer.
Megan?
Experienced, compassionate, and leader.
Daryl?
Disingenuous, insincere, corrupt.
Well, fascinating. Okay, what a great range. All right, Daryl, a couple of words. Doesn't have to be three. A couple of words that describe Donald Trump.
Clown show.
Megan?
A blowhard.
Linnell?
Dreamer. Builder.
Don?
Arrogant, ignorant, and offensive.
Darcy?
Genuine, hard worker, and not political incorrect. I like that.
Darcy, we should point out, is wearing a PC button with a big red line through it. No political correctness
here.
Erica?
Racist, uninformed, and bigot.
And Aaron?
Xenophobe and embarrassment.
So that raises the words they've all used, Andre, raises something that you suggested we talk about, and I think it's a great topic. Most of these went to character.
Mm-hmm.
So what does matter in an election like this one? What do you vote on? Do you vote on the candidate's substance and what you know about her or his positions on issues, what you think of their intellect in being able to handle unexpected issues that come along, or does substance play a large, or does character play a big part in why you're going to vote the way you vote? Throw it out. Who wants to try it? You want to try it, Aaron?
I would say in past elections, it has been substance and policy. But this election, due to Trump alone, it has become character.
So now what about Trump says that this has to be the outlier election?
He has no substance. So at the end of the day, you can only judge his character, which changes day to day.
Okay. Daryl, I saw that you...
Hillary Clinton is married to somebody who's been called the greatest politician of our time, the smoothest, most natural politician. At some point, he should have said, honey, that server's not a good idea. Because without the server, without the emails, without everything that goes with it, I mean, she's got baggage. I mean, you know, she needs four bellhops to help her get out of the car, I think. But at the end of the day, the servers is a huge deal for a lot of folks. So either she is dishonest or she's just not smart when it comes to thinking about stuff like that. And if you're planning on running for president, it's like Donald Trump with the tape from 2005, you've got to be aware that things are going to come up. And neither one of them seem to have thought very much about the, I guess, ramifications of what they've done.
So what's the balance between character and substance, Megan?
I think it has become so imbalanced, this particular election. I think that for those people who have visceral reactions to Hillary Clinton, dislike, hate, nothing can be tolerated or excused, somehow Trump seems like a better option. And I don't understand that. I'm not sure why this scenario exists where Trump is the better option than someone with 30 years of experience who can speak for those and speak directly about policy and have plans and have ideas and have history to prove that behind her. I think that Trump has gone so low and the threshold is so low that suddenly why as thinking people that actually seems better than whatever one thinks about Hillary. I don't see how that makes him any better.
Absolutely. And to tout that 30 years of experience, that's why she's not qualified or should not be a presidential candidate. To me, he's been in the Republican convention, Republican arena for over 20 years and flirting with the idea of running for president for at least 10 years. Now, whether that was announced or not, but he's been attending those, he had attended those conventions. So to say that you're not a politician where you may not have had, you may not have been in an elected office, but that's something that you had an attraction or something that you were around, to me kind of says that you gave yourself permission to do things that were contrary to that. And then when you became a candidate, then I'm an outlier. And to me, that's a juxtaposition.
Darcy. He's a businessman. Hmm? He's a businessman. And if you read his book, The Art of the Deal, it's fascinating. I cannot understand how people would support Hillary Clinton when we've got 33,000 emails that disappeared, where you've been told that she's been telling her staff to destroy her BlackBerry with a hammer. The Benghazi incident. Four lives. Okay, what does that matter, or whatever exact words she said? This woman is heartless. It's not about the American people. And I look at Donald Trump, who doesn't need to do this. I mean, he's been through the ringer for the past 16, 17 months. His children, I admire him. I've met him at the rally that was here in February. I am deplorable Darcy, call me that. And I, my face was circulating through the internet because I met Newt Gingrich at Kennesaw State University, and three of us women walked in with black t-shirts and saying deplorables. And they took that picture and went all over. So I just think, you know, he's the one for the job.
So for what it's worth, I don't think you're deplorable.
Thank you.
Linnell, I saw you shaking your head.
I agree with her 100%. I am totally 1,000% behind Trump. I don't even understand how our country is allowing a woman who is under investigation from the FBI just flagrantly disregarding national security that we are all... It affects all of us. And, you know, for people to make comments about Trump's character, he hasn't killed anybody. He hasn't been responsible for deaths. You know, he hasn't been responsible for the vacuum that was made in all of these foreign countries that we're dealing with as far as ISIS is concerned. I don't even understand if you or I or anybody in this room had committed half of the crimes that Hillary has committed, they would not be allowed to run for office. I think it's disgraceful. And I think it sets up a bad example for our children going on in the future.
So we're running out of time for this segment, but if I could throw one quick question out. Andre, we hear every day that voters are making their choices between two candidates they don't really like. And many people say they're voting against rather than for. That's not what I hear in this group tonight, unless I'm missing it. A show of hands, I know it's radio, but we'll say, how many of you think you're choosing between two not very good candidates?
Two of you,
Aaron and Daryl. And the rest of you, you are choosing a person you think we can lead this country in a positive. Your vote is a positive vote.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Actually, I'm with the other two.
And you haven't spoken up much, so like, what's your take?
I think part of my issue right now is that in the debates and here, what we're hearing here is it's all about personalities, and we're not talking a lot about issues. I know we did talk about issues a little while ago, but I mean, this is what we need to struggle with the issues, whether it be immigration, granted, or gun violence, when we need to figure out some kind of common ground. And I don't see Trump striving for a common ground. I see Hillary as a deal maker, and I'm going to be upset with her a few times. I'm sure of that. But I see her as a deal maker.
All right.
With the banks, maybe.
Yeah, all right, we're going to get a break in. We have intentionally left for the end of this program, the last big last segment, the two really hot topics this week, the Trump video and the Sunday night debate. So we're going to take a very short break. You're listening to Political Rewind. But Andra, when we get back, let's dig into
it. All right.
Hey, it's Peter Sagal. Your car can make so many sounds, sputtering, backfiring, squeaking, grinding, if it's my car. Threats muttered under its breath. Trade in those sounds for the sounds of public radio. Donating that unwanted car, truck, or even an RV is easy and helps the station in a big way. You may even earn a tax write-off.
Go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR and thanks.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm here with Andra Gillespie and our voter panel with just a few weeks left before the election. Andra, we've saved, I think, maybe the most interesting for the end. Why don't you go ahead?
Most interesting or the elephant in the room, depending on how you want to talk about it. So I'm sure by now all of you have heard about the Access Hollywood tape or the TikTok tape. So I'm seeing nods of yes. So first, can you tell me how you heard about it?
So Political Rewind had actually just gone off and it was breaking news right after Political Rewind went off on Friday.
I had the same with me. I turned on my car radio.
Right.
There it was.
And I thought, you've got to be, I wasn't shocked, but I thought to myself, you've got to be kidding me. So
anybody else, did you hear about it at about 4 o'clock, or did you hear about it a little bit later?
It's about that time. It was a pop-up on my phone.
Okay.
And yeah.
So what was your reaction to hearing about the tapes? Linnell.
I'm sorry. I thought the opposition was, struggling to find something. You've got to dig back 11 years and to some locker room banter to try to shock everybody. I think in the age of gay marriage and transgender using the bathroom, how is this a big deal? I just didn't get it.
I would like to point out that calling it locker room talk is essentially playing down the fact that he admitted to sexual assault and supported it.
All I could think of was, where was this in February? Because had this come out when the primary was still competitive, we might not be talking about it today. We might be talking about substantive political policy issues. But there again, when you put I say it again, a clown show, this is the kind of election you get.
So, one of the things that's actually kind of interesting about this is that everybody's given a strategic answer, a nice political answer. So it is a testament to the fact that you all are political junkies. Were there any emotional responses, just out of curiosity?
I actually read the transcript, and that elicited the most emotional response to me. When you see it in writing, it has a sort of a different, more of a salacious, cruel tone to it. A little bit. So that was when I had more of the emotional response to it.
Don, you're nodding.
Well, yeah. I mean, and likewise, when he says, I can do whatever I want, I'm a star. I mean, that just smacks of what Bill Cosby, or what an entitlement of a wealthy man who thinks he can do whatever he wants to do.
You know, this happened 11 years ago. Okay. He was talking one-on-one as a man to a man. He was a private citizen back then. I don't really give a damn. I really don't give a damn, okay? And don't tell me that any of these men in this audience have not said that, whether they're at a bar, at a football game, sitting in a locker room. 11 years ago, did Donald Trump say, I'm going to be running for president in 2016. I better watch what I say. Let's talk about what Bill Clinton did in the Oval Office. Let's talk about that with Monica Lewinsky.
I'd like to point out Hillary Clinton's running for office, not Bill.
Okay, but the
and
husband
she covered
but
for
the husband,
Bill.
Exactly. And those four women on Sunday night were in that audience. And she supported him.
But I think to that point.
So I'm going to say she stood with her man back then. I'm standing with my man now.
And I think to that point, to say something was 11 years ago, but to then go back 20 years ago, is much of a contradiction. I do think that, and it was good to hear athletes come out to say that we're offended that he's calling this locker room banter. Take responsibility for your words. And I think we even had an Atlanta
Falcon. You don't think they talk like that? Come on.
I'm a retired firefighter. I was not offended by that. Because you spend 20 years in fire stations, you hear all kinds of stuff.
Okay, but so our two ardent Trump supporters saying this are saying you're saying this is not a deal breaker. You're one of the undecideds in the room, Daryl. Is this going to have an impact, whether you were shocked or not, given the way he talked about women? Is it have an impact on your vote?
And it will have an impact. It's just a matter of, you know, which, and I said earlier, which candidate I like the least. Will not get my vote. And
but does this influence?
This absolutely influences. I mean, and you know, I was raised by my mom. You know, I've got a lot of respect for women. And he's said other things about women. And, you know, this is not the first, you know, woman moment he's had. He spent most of the last debate tweeting about Miss Universe. And it's... Like I said, I don't know why it came out now. It came out now, I think, for obviously political reasons, but I wish it'd been on our side back in February.
Megan, you've been waiting.
I prefer to think the bar is higher, and especially with the men in this room, that there's an assumption they've all just, of course, said that because they're a man. I resent that if it's because I'm a woman, if something is just assumed. And I think the men would resent that, too, and I think... My husband and my son resent that, and I think the bar should be higher. Just because he's a man, they've all said it. We should be bothered by it. Everyone.
80 million copies of 50 Shades of Grey were purchased. So let's
I don't
be
think that
here.
Book is the same as what he
I
was
didn't
saying,
read the book,
though.
Nor did I go see the movie. I but didn't it was either. All about sex, sex, sex. 80 million copies.
And I feel like his video was a little more about
and this, the porn
conquering.
Industry. I Googled that yesterday because I knew this was going to be brought up. It's a $4 billion industry. So these people that portray, oh, that's so horrible, we don't know what goes on behind closed doors.
Well, I know we've talked about it a little bit in bringing up Bill Clinton, but what about the issue of Donald Trump saying that he could just walk up and kiss women and grab them?
He was just probably joking. We don't know.
He
was
probably bragging.
Okay,
you know,
and
like
yes, he does have a big ego. And maybe I would have a big ego, too, if I did what he did and created all the jobs that he's done, not only in this country, but in this world with all the hotels he's built.
So without, I don't know how to do this without putting some value judgment out, but I'm fascinated by the fact that in this room, it is two of the women on the panel who are defending Trump, who could certainly be said to objectify women in statements like that. But it doesn't bother you two. And on the other hand, it does bother Megan and Erica. I'm fascinated by the split among women on this.
So... Did this change anything for people? Did this move people toward a candidate, away from a candidate? How did it react? So, Aaron, you're shaking your head.
I was originally a Bernie Sanders supporter. When he dropped out, I played around with the idea of Gary Johnson, but after everything that's occurred this past week, I knew without a doubt that I could not play around with the fate of America anymore. So I went Hillary through and through.
Did anybody else change their position as a result of the tape? So people were pretty strong wherever they were at this particular point. All right. So what about the debate? So we had this debate on Sunday. What did you expect to learn from the debate?
I didn't expect to really gain anything. To me, it was to see how candidate Trump was going to respond to having had the 2005 video come out. Was he going to come out and be more substantive? Not that it was going to change my vote, because I'm for Hillary, but it was very interesting to see him continue down the same path of really bringing American politics to its lowest place that it could possibly go. So,
okay. Was anybody expecting a substantive debate?
I think he had a lot of substance, which he didn't get a chance to do in the first debate. He was able to bring out all of the charges, or most of the charges, that we who follow, you know, the doings of Mrs. Clinton very closely. And we wanted the American people to hear that, because the media seems to cover it up. every time she does something or there's some leak about her activities, they come up with a side story like this, you know, this sex thing. And they distract the people from the real issues of border security, rebuilding the infrastructure, taxes, education, you know, taking care of Americans first, because we need jobs. When I hear people talk about migrants coming in here and, you know, they work for lower pay, but that's knocking out people who are born here, citizens who have a right to have a job. And how do you know whether they'll work those jobs or not? If they don't have any jobs, they're unemployed, we're taking care of them with our tax dollars.
Let's go back to Andres, if we can. Thank you for that. But again, what you expected to learn and did or didn't learn from the debate, Megan?
I actually expected, well, I had no expectations for Trump, but I thought that he would talk about substance more. And instead, I felt that all he did was attack Hillary for everything that has gone wrong, which it almost seemed as if the mantra had been, you know, emblazoned into him by his advisors, whoever, just send it back to Hillary. It's your fault. Send it back to Hillary. It was your fault this happened, without giving even himself the opportunity to talk about his own point of view and plans and policies, whatever those are. It was a diversion to Hillary the entire night, even coming from him.
So did anybody learn anything new that could be useful in helping to make your voting decision, whether to solidify your choice or to just consider something else from Sunday night's debate? Aaron?
Trump is a sexual predator. I learned that.
You learned that from the debate? How?
His reaction was, I'll defeat ISIS. Anderson Cooper had to push him over and over again to get him to say, no, I didn't do that. He avoided the question several times before he finally said, no, I didn't do that.
What makes him a sexual predator?
Groping women, kissing them without consent.
Well, so let me,
he never
let me,
did that. He never did that. He came across very cool, calm, and collected Sunday night, and I think he delivered. I really do. And let's face it, he doesn't take millions of dollars from Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia, a country where they kill gays, they don't allow women to drive. Hillary takes money from them.
So let me, thank you. Let me ask a question sort of based on that. Is this the kind of debate we would like? Was the material covered in the debate, the charges, the countercharges, is this what we should expect a presidential debate to sound like, to look like?
It's disgraceful. I mean, my goodness, you know, I'm not sure if I should be mad at the anchors for this debate or not. I mean, they started off with the question about Donald Trump's the videotape, but, you know, they could have pressed for issues. You know, what do you want to do about the income inequality, wealth inequality? What do you, you know, do you acknowledge that climate change is real? And let's get past that. Let's start talking about how can we solve this? Can we have a carbon fee and dividend? That would be a conservative way to address pricing models for addressing climate change. But no, none of that.
Daryl. I'm going to sail on here and go back in the day. Debates, you know, there was a foreign policy debate, an economic debate, and then a debate. And the candidates came with their ideas and ideals for each of the topics to be discussed in that specific debate. These kind of have turned into like free for all, you know, throw as much mud as you can, see who gets the dirtiest, and let's all go home and get some good TV ratings. You know, they said 81 people watched the first one. 81 million people, I'm sorry, watched the first debate. They didn't watch for policy. They watched the show. And politics are important. And if you don't understand that politics literally in this country mean life and death, then, you know, for years people, it's just politics. But politics determines whether or not we go to war, whether or not you can go to the doctor. Politics mean a lot. And what's happened in this election, this campaign, both parties, is this devolved into a, you know, mudslinging clown show, I guess.
But I think we have to see kind of what drove it there, because the first question was modeling appropriate behavior for youth. That was the leadoff question in the debate. That's sad to me. We didn't get down to an actual question until the Affordable Care Act. It was like four questions down. So I think we have to look at the driver of how we've even gotten to this place where it's really almost like a show, entertainment, and things of that nature. So the whole prosecutorial rhetoric that we continue to see that's going on and playing out in media, how do we get to that place and get away from what Don spoke about, climate change, and some of the different points that Aaron brought up as well?
Don't watch that.
So did this start in 2016 or did this start earlier?
This started 18 months ago.
So you really do trace it back to this particular election cycle?
I do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
Absolutely.
Okay.
There was a classic moment when George Bush George Herbert Walker Bush debated Ronald Reagan, maybe, in a primary long ago, and they talked about immigration reform, and they had such an honest, substantive debate. Where is that today? You know?
I would like to say I think the anti-intellectual undertones that have been playing throughout society over the past few elections have really led to this. Back to what I mentioned about education, why it's so important. When you have an uneducated electorate, they want to watch this.
All right. We're really running out of time. excuse me. I'm going to throw out a question. Not everyone is going to get a shot at this. Given the way this election is playing out, what hope do you have that we will, on November 9th, begin to become a unified nation? Heal. Anybody? Darcy?
Well, I feel that, and I'm going to even, go back to August 9th, this country has been more divided than I have seen it in years, decades maybe. It's terrible. It's terrible. And I worry about our law enforcement officers. Two more got killed in California.
You're not optimistic that regardless of outcome, Trump, Clinton, that we're going to come together?
I hope with Trump coming into the office, I hope he will make a difference.
Real quick, Daryl.
I'm counting the days till 2020.
All right. We are completely out of time. Aaron Driver, Erica Wilson, Darcy Butkus, Don McAdam, Linnell Babbage-Torres, Megan McMeekin, and Daryl Welch. Thank you so much for giving us so much to chew on in our forum this afternoon. And Andra Gillespie, what a pleasure to get to work with
you.
Thank you,
as
Thank you
always.
So much for joining us for this. My thanks to Trevor Young, to senior producer Jenny Ament, and to Robert Jimison, our titan of Twitter and intern. This is Political Rewind. See you again on Friday afternoon.